a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. Every week, Steve will give us timely tips for caring for our plants. He'll answer your questions and give us expert advice. Now here's a walk through the garden with Steve Stone.
Good morning. Walk through the garden with Steve Stone, and today we have a special guest, Mr. Brad Evers. So, how are you, Brad?
Not too bad.
Nice Brad Evers is a school teacher, not Brad Evers the engineer, I think is the other one, but no, not that he wouldn't have things to say.
I can drive a train, too.
Yeah, not that kind of engineer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
I think it's going to be a nice day.
It is.
60 degrees, a little bit of a breeze, but...
Thursday was brutal, but yeah, we're doing much better today, and tomorrow look really, really nice.
Yep. So you talked about what might have happened Thursday. So,
yeah, there was a lot of plants that were just really blooming, you know, doing their thing as far as spring goes. The first one that, you know, jumps out at you usually is like the forsythia. The forsythia bloom a really brilliant yellow flower about this time of year. Also, the saucer magnolias. The saucer magnolias can get pretty good size for us around here. I've seen them probably pretty close to 15 to 18 foot. And they bloom a really large, about the size of a tennis ball, kind of a pinkish purple lavender color flower. And unfortunately, you know, those things were, we had enough really nice warm days that those things were really, I mean, just in the middle of their blooming period, and they were looking, were past tense, looking spectacular. And I noticed a couple different areas or places where there's a lot of forsythia and a lot of magnolia, or a huge magnolia I see as I'm going home from work. It used to be McDaniel's house, but I don't know.
Toby? Yeah. I can't think of his first name now, but he's mailman over in Coldwater.
Yeah.
Great kid. Jordan, that's his name.
Jordan. Yeah. When I come home from work, I turn there and head home, and McDaniel's always has, they've got a huge saucer magnolia on the side of their house, and you know, Wednesday, that baby was looking nice, and when I came home last night, not so much. The flowers were nearly completely open, and it would have lasted probably another week. I would say maybe even close, not 2 weeks, but at least another week. And the petals were just completely brown, and it was just, you know, the tree, the plant's fine, the forsythia are fine. Another one that is an early spring bloomer is a Royal Star. Magnolia Royal Stars bloom a white flower, maybe a little bit bigger than a golf ball, and kind of has a roughly kind of a bloom to it, but really bright snow white flower. And all those, you know, early season flowering trees or shrubs certainly had significant damage on the flowering. Now, again, that's not to say that the plants, you know, it didn't hurt the plants. The plants are perfectly fine. They're not going to croak. But, you know, it just eliminated abbreviated the flowering period, the flowering time for those plants.
Yeah, my forsythia that I have that you know, when you guys came, did stuff in my yard last year, trimmed that back, did some stuff, and it was looking really good. I didn't pay any attention to it Thursday or Friday, so I'm guessing it probably got hurt. I didn't look at it yesterday.
Yeah, they were again, those plants were in full bloom, and the temperatures we had that Thursday night were, I didn't check specifically, but just even by the looks of the damages on the plants, I would say was probably mid-20s. You know, some of those plants will tolerate a 30-degree night, but 25, no, not at all. So, you know, again, not a huge deal. The plants are going to continue to grow and thrive. It's just kind of eliminated some really pretty blooms, and a little bit longer period of flowering we're just simply not going to see. things that weren't damaged that people get really concerned about would be like tulips, crocuses, daffodils, hyacinths. Those, you know, made it through that night no problem. They're not going to be hurt or delayed or injured
even,
at all.
Even if they were blooming?
Most of them, like daffodils, if you pay any kind of attention at all, when you're driving, because I typically, and anybody that drives with me can vouch for the fact that I'm usually looking both sides of the vehicle for trees and flowers more so than I'm looking straight ahead. And
so you drive approximately until there's somebody coming toward you, as long as you feel pavement.
Right,
when
exactly.
If you hear the rumble strips or the gravel, you're...
Right, exactly.
He usually takes a lot of time at stop signs and kind of looks then.
and then looks for traffic.
And then looks for traffic, yes, and then proceeds cautiously.
Okay. The daffodils are blooming like crazy right now. There's an incredible home south of... actually, it's just on this side of Greenville. And if you're heading to Greenville for anything this weekend, take 49 all the way into Greenville. Just past Children's Home Road on the right-hand side, if you're going toward on the west side, if you're going into Greenville, there's a house, and I don't know how many thousands of daffodils have been planted in and around the house and on the little wooded area next to the house. But it's kind of a showstopper. In fact, I have stopped and taken pictures before. I don't know if I've checked my rearview mirror or not, but I just stopped to take pictures.
I've seen that plenty of times. I don't notice the ones around the house so much, but the ones in the woods, that woods is
full.
Is full of daffodils.
There's another house.
It's just awesome.
There's another house in Versailles on Versailles Southeastern. It's just south of Versailles. It's the same way. It's a lightly wooded lot with a house setting in the middle of it. And there's just thousands and thousands of daffodils blooming. And I was in actually Versailles this week, so I just drove out past there because I knew it was prime time, and it's amazing. But yeah, the daffodils, those flowers are actually pretty tough. They're going to make it through a frosty night. It may abbreviate their flowering by a few days, but it's certainly not going to kill the flowers. They're going to tolerate that fine. Hyacinths are going to tolerate that fine because I've got quite a few hyacinths out front that are in front of my house that are blooming. They made it through that night no problem at all. The pansies I had planted last fall, they made it through no problem. They look fantastic. Cold night. One of the things to think about too on those really cold, frosty nights is I've mowed once already. I mowed last week. I can't remember when, Tuesday, Wednesday, and the grass was pretty long. And if you haven't mowed, you probably need to. We talked about that last Saturday. Get the mower out, get the blade sharp, and get ready to start mowing. If you haven't, you probably need to. But in the mornings when you're going to have a frost, which again the forecast looks really nice. Actually, I didn't see any significant cold.
No, I think last night was the coldest for a long time because it's going to be 60, low 60s today, high 60s tomorrow for Easter, and then 70s at least through Thursday next week. So there won't be anything lower than 40 probably.
Lowest nighttime I'm seeing until next Saturday is 43. So it doesn't necessarily come into play, but I'm sure it's going to because it's like the first week of April. When you do have a really cold, frosty night and you're out in the morning or you're taking the dogs out or whatever you're doing and there's that layer of frost on the grass, stay off of that until it has an opportunity to, the temperatures come up and get warm enough that frost kind of melts away on its own. Because if you're out walking on a really hard frosted grass, or you get off the edge of your driveway like I did a few days ago and drive through the grass when there's frost on it, it's really hard on the grass. You'll see that.
Does your boss know that you did that?
Well, I'd blame the boss.
Oh.
When I said, who drove through the yard? No, I'm just kidding. it can, when the blades are frozen, basically, and the cells inside the blade of grass, there's moisture inside there, that actually freezes. And when you step on it or drive across it, and it's rigid, it's, you know, like anything else, it breaks because it's froze. And then that break obviously creates damage. It damages the cells. It creates, I mean, it's not going to kill the grass, but you're going to see that damage for weeks after the fact, after you do it. So, again, if you're awfully particular about your lawn, just don't walk on it or, you know, minimize traffic on it until it, you know, it's 10 o'clock or 9:30 or whatever, and that frost kind of goes away, because it will leave tracks.
Yep.
From a lawn care standpoint, we certainly cannot do or will not do lawn applications when there's frost on the ground, because it leaves tracks. You'll see every footprint. You'll see every tire mark with pushing the spreader or driving the ride-on spreader through the lawn. You'll leave tracks that will be there for weeks and weeks after you do your application, so you have to stay off of them.
Yep. So, as far as...
Enough. We need to take a break, because I've been awfully windy.
Yes. Well, we can take a break now, and then we'll shift gears, and we'll talk about some other plant and flower stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's what we probably should have named the show, Plant and Flower Stuff.
Stuff, right, exactly.
Okay, be back in just a minute with Steve Stone and Brad Evers. Back in a minute.
The versatile Kubota B-Series is a do-it-all tractor. Run powerful attachments that can be easily switched out. It features a hydrostatic transmission and is simple to maintain. The Kubota B-Series. It makes the hard work look easy. Talk to your local Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo.
Your local Kubota dealer is Hall Brothers in Fort Recovery, Ohio.
Working hard on another project? Maybe you need some practical advice, or perhaps you just want to find a great new tool. Let me be the first to welcome you in. Hi, I'm Mike with Wangler Hardware, and since 1916, this has been the place where the hardworking folks in our area go to get things done. Experience the tradition, selection, and service of Wangler Ace Hardware in Fort Recovery. Stop in and see that we're more than a hardware store. It's all here.
Looking to become a part of a company that uses the vision of their team members to assist them in becoming successful? Cooper Farms does just that. We utilize the ideas and visions of our team members to make our processes better, easier, safer today. The Fort Recovery Division of Cooper Farms is currently seeking individuals to fill open egg packaging and sanitation positions. To learn more about these positions, as well as other open positions, please visit cooperfarms.com/join our team. Cooper Farms, more than a workplace.
The Fort Recovery Firefighters Association will be serving their annual barbecue chicken dinners on Sunday, April 11th at the Fire Hall. That's right. They'll be serving those great barbecue chicken dinners that we all love. The tickets are pre-sale only, and the dinners are only $8 each and are available from any of the firemen. And be sure to grab a couple of extra dinners for a quick lunch during the week. Get your tickets now, then stop down on Sunday afternoon, April 11th from 4 to 6 and pick up your chicken dinners. Just drive through the alley on the north side of the fire hall and they'll bring them to you. The Fort Recovery Firefighters Chicken Dinners, Sunday, April 11th from 4 to 6. Get your tickets now from any Fort Recovery firefighter.
Hey, we're on. Back with Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone, and today also Brad Evers. So,
He's my chauffeur.
Yeah, I did have to pick him up this morning.
Did he tip over? Is that why you picked him up?
Well, you know, we're talking about him, the way he drives a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
His vehicle's at Carriage Works right now. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I'm sure it was somebody else's fault.
No, so I got to pick him up and...
Drag him over here.
Yeah, except he drove my car, and I'm not sure... She's been exercised like that before.
I don't know why my driving's always a topic of conversation.
Well, I was a driver's ed instructor for a little while.
Ah.
And I do notice a few flaws in his driving.
Well, at least he's not driving in the big city with four lanes going each direction. So
that's true.
The cars you come upon either coming toward you or the same direction are few and far between around here.
That is true.
So you can kind of wander around on the road. while you're gazing at people's flowers.
Well, they talk about the farmers that they should, some of them should be arrested for DWCC.
Yeah.
I'm kind of the same way. You know, DWCC is driving while checking crops.
Yeah.
I'm driving while checking flowers and landscaping. So
that, he does do a lot of that.
It's,
yep.
it's the same thing.
Well, we do have one around here that out in the country, I'm not sure if he's even checking crops because I'm not sure he still farms, but he literally goes 25 to 30 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, I know who that is.
Yes, everybody knows who that is. And it is, that's dangerous. You can come over a hill and there he is. So
that's never a problem. That's never a problem with me. I don't usually have people coming up behind me. There's usually a lot of, there's not a lot of people that come up behind me unless
they have sirens.
They have like the real pretty like Christmas lights on top of their vehicle. Those guys come up behind me, but nobody else does.
So you can look fast when you're going along at 55 miles an hour instead of 25. You can see all those flowers and trees fast.
Oh,
that's good.
Well, I know where the good places are, so I slow down for like the house.
Well, you might be missing some that people just got done. Now, everybody doesn't get their landscaping done by Nature's Green. There are other people that do their own, or there's some other ones out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of good guys out there.
Yeah.
I'd be the first one to admit it when I see the nice work. I'll stop and look at that.
Yeah.
Get some ideas.
Yeah.
That he does.
Go back at night, dig them up, and take them to your place. Sell them to somebody else. That probably didn't really happen. Yeah, it probably didn't happen, really. He has Brad do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Sneakier. So, anyway, we were, you know, in the last segment talking about real stuff. Now we're just talking about DWCC.
That's right.
So what's this segment about here?
Well, it's the time of year. We talked about it, I think, a few weeks back. It's the time of year where, you know, people are getting excited to get outside and work, which is fine. I mean, planting trees and shrubs right now, I get a lot of people ask, you know, when's the best time to plant? And it doesn't matter. I mean, April, May, even into early June is perfectly fine for your landscaping and trees, shrubs, whatever. You know, September, October, November is also a great time. But spring is when most people are excited to get outside, and especially after a long winter and with the, I think, the COVID restrictions starting to be lifted a bit and people starting to kind of venture out again, thank goodness. You know, there's just a lot of, you know, work to be done, and a lot of people actually just excited to get outside. And so planting now is great. The only thing you want to be very careful about is if you're looking at annuals, you know, geraniums, marigolds, things like that, it's too early to do that. They say the frost-free date for this part of Ohio is May 15th. I'm usually planting stuff at my house by probably, it depends on temperatures and the time of year, or the year, how the
things trended,
shaping up. I'm usually trying to plant by the end of April, 1st of May. Been bitten a couple of times, but I can always sneak a few extra plants out of the back of the greenhouse that nobody sees if it dies. But
that's just more that you can't sell.
That's true.
So you're taking food out of your poor little kid's mouth.
Mouse, exactly. Thanks for bringing that.
Starving your kids, stealing plants from the local nursery.
Right. You want to be careful. Like I said, some things will tolerate cold perfectly, you know, perfectly well. Petunias, like the wave petunias, which are super popular, those actually are pretty cold tolerant. They'll take a 32-degree night and bounce right back. Geraniums, marigolds, you know, some of the other ones are escaping me right now. Some of them are just a little bit more fussy with cold nights. Certainly the avid gardeners are out and about already wanting to get their garden growing and going. And there's certain, you know, vegetables, I think we also talked about that a few weeks back, carrots, radishes, any of your varieties of lettuce. There's a lot of spring gardening that can be done right now. The temperatures are perfectly fine. You're going to get good germination. Plants are going to grow. You just need to stay away from your warm season vegetables and warm season plants, which would be tomatoes. Just absolutely hate. They actually hate cold soil and cold temperatures. So if you feel like a tomato, if you feel like, because everybody wants to plant tomatoes to have fresh tomatoes during the summer, even if you planted it in a protected site outdoors right now and you thought, well, I'm going to get it planted now and get a head start and I'll cover it if it gets cold.
Yeah, and it's going to be 70 next week.
You're not going to get a head start necessarily because they hate cold feet. They hate cold. And so you could plant it now and you have a 70-degree day, but I haven't put my soil thermometer out to see what the soil temperatures are. They got to be in the 50s, low 50s, if that. Those plants, especially a tomato, is not going to do anything when it's the soil's that cold. It needs warm temperatures and warm soil conditions before it's going to thrive. So, in my opinion, you're kind of wasting your time because you're not going to get that much of a leg up if you get it in early, because really the roots aren't going to do anything because the soil's so cold. So those are the plants you just need to wait till at least probably the first of May to even think about planting. Tomatoes, peppers, all your vining crops like cucumbers and pumpkins and watermelon and all that stuff is much, much, much better waiting to plant those, unless you can plant indoors. Start your seeds. If you do your own seeds with tomatoes, you can start those right now, because a lot of those are 4 to 6 weeks for germination. So if you plant them now, timing's perfect. They'll be up and growing and ready to transplant outside. Likewise, I can't remember all the dates, but specifically, again, 4 to 6 weeks, you're going to be able to get something up, usually, if you're watering and have it in a nice sunny location, up and growing, by, again, 4 to 6 weeks. So if you start some stuff from seed, which can be a lot of fun if you've got room in your house or garage or wherever, and very, very inexpensive, because seeds are really cheap for vegetable gardening. You can get a lot of bang for your buck with a dollar package of seeds. Getting them up and growing, if you're watering, is relatively easy. Just, again, wait till that first, second week of May before you want to take them outdoors and plant them.
Mm-hmm. So, what I'm thinking, you're saying there are a few annuals you could put in, but for the most part,
pansies are fantastic right now. Mm-hmm. We've had lots of people out wanting pansies. Those are, you cannot literally damage them with cold. They just simply love cold temperatures. I planted a bunch of pansies last fall and they made it through the winter perfectly fine, and they're blooming like crazy this spring. So they're a plant that just tolerates that. Vegetables, I forgot to mention, what they call cold crops, not cold, C-O-L-D-C-O-L-E, cold crops would be your broccoli, cauliflower, cabbages, all those different plants, again, vegetable type plants, are also very, very, very cold tolerant. And so those are also, vegetables. If you wanted to plant early, you can plant those right now. They're not going to be bothered at all by cold temperatures, and they're going to get an early start. And in fact, the best time probably to grow your lettuces are going to be when temperatures and soil are actually very cool. Mm-hmm. So if you're a lettuce person, there's a million different types of lettuces that you can grow. I mean, from head lettuce to different types of leaf lettuce. This is, April into May is the perfect time to grow those. They actually hate hot temperatures. And usually if you try to grow them through the summer, they'll bolt, which means they kind of go to seed. And then the lettuce tastes lousy anyhow in that time of year. So those are definitely spring fall plants. You plant them in the spring. You can plant them via seed or through, starts, cell packs from a garden center. And those are obvious. Those are much better, early season, and then plant in, August, September, and then harvest through, September, October, sometimes even in early November. Mm-hmm. The way they grow is better, and certainly the taste is a lot better. They're just a cool season plant.
Yep.
So lots and lots and lots to do out there.
So soil temperature is much, much more important on a lot of the like tomatoes and that type of thing.
Soil temperature is critical.
Than air temperature. Yeah. You can, as long as, you know, we keep getting 70 degree days, that soil temperature is going to go up. But if next week we get all temperatures in the 40s, that's going to kind of stop that. And then so just because it gets to be 70 degrees and you get the itch doesn't mean you want to go out and do that yet if the soil temperature is still chilly.
Yeah, soil temperatures are critical. I mean, it's not, you know, people think planting, you don't plant or grow things according to the calendar. The calendar is completely irrelevant. You know, like the farmers around here, they don't look at the calendar and decide, I got to go plant today. They look at temperatures, and they specifically look at soil temperatures. And when the soil temperatures get, you know, which obviously the soil temperature is going to be dictated by air, temperature and sun and yada, yada, yada. But soil temperature is critical. I mean, again, we've had some nice dry weather, and you could have taken thousands of dollars and gone out and bought your corn and planted it because it was dry.
Yeah.
It's not going to come up, but you can do it because the soil temperature is just too cold and it'll never get out of the ground. So, you know, again, same thing for, you know, planting gardens and everything else. Planting, we'll get into that after the break as far as, you know, again, seeding. We're to April. The soil temperatures are actually colder than I'd like. But we're probably, if it stays dry, we're probably going to go ahead and start seeding some of the projects we have to seed, doing lawn installation and stuff, because the soil's actually too cold, but the forecast looks good, and so we'd rather get it down early and get that grass an opportunity to get more showers on it and get it up and growing. But, you know, again, I'll get my thermometer out there today and see what soil temperature is. But like I said, I would assume it's probably in the high 40s right now, which is great if you haven't done your pre-emergent in your on your lawn. Because, again, that crabgrass, they say you have to have your crabgrass control down by April 15th in this part of Ohio. And again, it's not a calendar date. It's not, you gotta have it, you know, it's soil temperature. Once the soil temperature reaches 57 to 58 degrees, crabgrass is going to germinate and grow. And if you don't have your pre-emergent down, the crabgrass is going to, you know, take off and grow. And then you can put your pre-emergent down once that seed germinates and puts out a root and puts out a stalk and or blade and starts to grow. That pre-emergence got zero effect on that. It's already you missed the opportunity. But right now you've still got plenty of time because of what the weather looks like temperature wise to get your pre-emergent down to get your lawn ready.
Yep. So we'll take a break here and shift gears again. Does that sound okay?
That sounds perfect.
All right, be back in just a minute or two.
It's time to begin planning your landscape improvements for this summer. Nature's Green Nursery can design a beautiful, cost-effective, no-maintenance landscape for your home or business with quality trees, shrubs, perennials, soils, and mulch. Steve Stone has a degree in horticulture landscape. Call Nature's Green at 419-375-2322 today and set up a free landscape design and evaluation. Check out Nature's Green on the web or like them on Facebook. Nature's Green Nursery on State Route 119 just east of Fort Recovery, Ohio.
Proudly serving the Fort Recovery area for over 23 years, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has the expertise to handle any dirt work you need. From installing waterways and building pads to demolition work and septic system installation, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has all the equipment you need to get the job done right. Does your driveway need some fresh gravel, or do you need some dirt hauled in? We can take care of all your hauling needs as well. Give Brian a call at 419-852-6655. Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage. Go Indians.
Do you have everything you need for Easter dinner? Wayne Street Market has everything you need to take care of your crew, from fresh vegetables and other side dishes to the ham and anything else you need, they have it all. And don't forget to order your veggie or fruit trays and your meat and cheese trays. Order ahead at 375-2865 to be sure they have it ready for you. Easy and convenient, make Wayne Street Market your Easter headquarters, the hometown store that saves you more. Fort Recovery baseball team is having an apparel sale. Here's a great opportunity to show your support for the program by getting some items featuring Fort Recovery baseball. Fleece blankets, carry-all totes, stadium seats, jerseys, long and short sleeve t-shirts, hooded sweatshirts, and more, with most clothing items available in women's, men's, and youth sizes and styles. Get your order form from any of the players or at Purple Post. Pick out what you want and return it by Thursday, April 8th. You can send it with your student to the school office or drop it off at the Purple Post. Be sure to show your support for the team this season with your own official Fort Recovery baseball apparel. Again, you can get your order form now from any player or at the Purple Post. Be sure to return it to the school or the Purple Post by Thursday, April 8th. Thanks for supporting our Fort Recovery baseball program.
Okay, we're back on a walk through the garden with Steve Stone, and today also Brad Evers. So what are we going to do for our last segment here? What are we talking about? We were over the break, we were talking about a Lamborghini, but that's probably not what we're going to that's not a garden
mulch
thing
now.
Yeah.
So a lot of people coming out and getting, you know, mulch for their homes and landscapes, which is fine. There's a lot of different types of mulch out there. The basic two different mulches you'll find at a lot of places bulk wise would be a bark type of a mulch, which is the bark of a tree kind of ground up. And I'm a little more partial to the bark mulches because which a lot of people don't care for the fact they do decompose faster, which is a good thing for your soil and your plants because it creates organic matter and can loosen heavy clay soils. The other type of mulch is the recycled or dyed mulches, and it can be dyed red, black, brown, and it's more of the heartwood of a tree, or can be recycled wood material that might be pallets ground up. And there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. It doesn't decompose as readily. It's usually dyed. The dyes are, you know, pretty color fast as far as they don't fade as quickly. A lot of people like the dyed mulches because they don't fade very readily, whereas the hardwood, the more organic mulches, will fade to kind of a silver gray with a lot of sun over the summertime. Again, there's pros and cons to each. I have always been really a fan of the bark mulches because, again, it's just a better organic matter. It does decompose more rapidly or readily, which is good for the soil and good for your plants. I also like the texture better. The texture tends to be a lot more fine, whereas the recycled mulches are a little bit more chunky or clumpy. This has a coarser texture to it, which I, again, not a huge fan of. If you are moving it yourself and doing it yourself, the dyed mulches will definitely stain your hands and can stain your driveway if it's dumped in the drive. You can put a piece of plastic down, and we can dump on top of the plastic to keep it from staining your concrete. But realize that the stain isn't going to last all summer. It usually lasts for a couple weeks, maybe a month, and then the sun, rain, and everything else kind of washes it off. But the dyed mulches will definitely, if you're using black mulch, you know, your hands might be black at the end of the day and might be black for a day afterwards from spreading it if you're using your hands. But again, it's non-toxic. It's not toxic to you or your pets or anything, so it's perfectly fine to use.
How about the decomposition of stone? I noticed more people are using a little stone also.
That doesn't decompose. That's
I didn't know if he was talking
that's
about
millennia.
I didn't know if he was talking about me because I didn't know if he was talking about me because I feel like I'm kind of decomposing on a day-to-day basis. That's a great question, actually. That's why I brought the best color man in the business along today. There is a lot of people going to different types of decorative aggregates. We call it different types of decorative stone. There's locally quarried decorative wash gravel that can be relatively inexpensive because it comes out of quarries that are in Mercer, Dark, Jay, Randolph counties. And that can have some nice, it has a, it's not like the gravel that you buy at the local quarry that you put under your driveway or whatever. It's a smooth washed type of a stone and can have a nice variation in colors from grays to tans to sometimes you'll find some granite in there that might be black or pink. And again, a lot of people are going to a stone or, you know, a decorative aggregate, we call it. We have three different types at the nursery. We have one called black granite that's really, well, it kind of looks like black granite. So oh. I think that's why they call it black granite.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Huh. Oh, we darn.
Dark in nature.
And yes. So that people really like because it's a... it's not black like you think of a black truck, but I mean it's like a real dark charcoal gray color. We have a real light stone. I think it's called Alabama Sunset, and it's real light or whitish in color. And then we have the all the different types of mulches, and then we have the locally quarried stuff. When you start talking about the aggregates, you're all over the place as far as prices go. I think most of that is due to just simply trucking when it comes in from wherever it's coming from. It can come in from all over the United States, basically. So your trucking cost kind of dictates that. But some of that stone can be, you know, 100, you know, the locally quarried stuff can be around 50, 60 bucks a ton. Then you go up from there. So some of the, like the black granite can be $150 a ton. It can go up to, there's a Kiwanee Skippers, they're called, which is another really, really cool decorative aggregate that we've used on projects before. Crown's a big fan of it. If you go through New Bremen, their offices they rebuilt, renovated when they bought Howell's IGA. They've got that Kiwanee Skippers. They're about as big as a saucer plate, and they're all around the buildings. Those babies run about $800 a ton. So they're just all over the place. The trade-off to that is if you use a decorative aggregate, you nearly, in my opinion, you always want to use a weed fabric because mulches will do a pretty good job of controlling weeds, but an aggregate will not. It will just, so you're kind of killing yourself if you put an aggregate over the dirt and you're not putting a weed fabric down. So you need to put weed fabric down. You need to put an edging down to keep the grass from growing up into the beds. And you're creating a very, 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 very low maintenance type of a landscape. You're not remulching every year, you're not re-edging every year, and you're certainly, if you put a good weed fabric down, you're not weeding, you're not going to get rid of every weed, but you're going to eliminate a lot of weeding and eliminate a lot of maintenance that you have to spend in your lawn and landscape. So every season we do more and more and more and more of the decorative aggregates. We're, like I said, handling different kinds, the more popular kinds now, because we get so much call for it. Definitely the way the industry is kind of trending.
And I see there's several places around town where their curb lawn, tree lawn, between yep. their sidewalk and the street, people are putting
a decorative aggregate down. That's a tough place to grow grass. The grass usually in those areas will look great in May and possibly October. And then other than that, it's a difficult place to grow grass. So people are opting for not mowing those spaces and doing a decorative, you know, aggregate in those areas. So yeah, it has its uses, and I'm not a fan of it. Again, when you put the edging down and you put the weed fabric down, you pretty much eliminate. I mean, I know, Neil, you like piddling around in the landscaping and planting and moving and dividing.
I don't like it. I just have to do it sometimes. I like the flowers. I hate the work.
But it creates a very low maintenance landscape, but obviously if you're putting a weed fabric down through your landscaping beds to eliminate weeds, you don't want to be out there consistently cutting holes in it, moving, dividing, adding, and taking out plants, which I piddle around with plants at yeah. home incessantly. So it would never work for me because I'm not a fan. I just am in my landscape beds too much. Again, if you want, you know, a commercial application, we did a couple hotels last year. Commercial applications, certainly the landscape architects and people that are doing some of the design work for commercial projects that we install, they're wanting us to do that because it creates less maintenance for the homeowner or the business owner. It creates a lot less maintenance.
Yeah, and with my CALP stuff, I delivered to a lot of nursing homes. There's three or four fairly new ones, and it is all stone.
Yep. You don't have to remulch. You don't have to edge. You don't have to weed. You know, it's a lot more expensive out of the gate, you know, to put in a landscape and then spread 10 yards of mulch around it once you're done. You know, you could do that in a couple hours.
Yeah.
So labor and materials and mulch is dramatically less expensive than a lot of different types of organ or aggregates. So you have more money up front because hauling, you know, dumping, I mean, doing that work is just grueling because that stuff is so heavy. You can't rake it like you rake mulch out. So basically, you're on your hands and knees almost pushing it around with your hands to get it around all the plants. Again, a lot more expensive up front, but if you look at that cost, especially at a big commercial site like a nursing home, you look at that cost over a 10-year period of time, it's dramatically less expensive.
Yeah.
So that's the reason it's going that direction.
So I was just thinking, since we have Brad here, let's. How's the pool business?
Well, I'm going to need a whole segment, so not sure we have enough time today.
I have plenty of time. What do you need? Where do you have to go?
We got to be out of here by 10. You have 2 hours.
2 hours. Okay, that'd be perfect. No. No, I'll tell you. How I kind of got in the pool business, I guess, with Steve here is we've taken a lot of trips together through the traveling tribe. He and his kids have went with us over to Europe. And the guy does live and breathe landscape because that's points out.
Did you ever bring up the fact, like, was it Germany that they erected that statue of me and you over there in that little town because we were so popular? They cast that bronze, those statues of you and I because we were so popular in Europe.
If I remember,
I mean, we're not nearly as popular in the United States as we are in Europe.
Yeah. If I remember right, they were chasing us out of town.
Oh, that's what it was. With the pitchforks.
Yeah. No. But, we've had some good times over there, and Steve does look at the landscaping, points a lot of things out, and over the years, he's kind of mentioned about maybe opening a pool business, things like that. And then the last trip, he was talking about how I should, you know, jump in with him and, you know, start a pool company. He thought the demand is out there. And after looking at it, you know, for quite a while, I didn't give it a whole lot of thought.
Yeah.
But then I kind of thought, you know, that might be a good thing with me being a teacher. I do have the summers off,
yeah,
so to speak. So I thought that might be a good time to start throwing some pools in, kind of keep me busy during the summer.
Yep.
And I got looking into it, and it was fascinating. It was interesting to me. So I talked to Steve and said, let's go ahead and do this. And, you know, we thought we'd just jump right in. But there are a lot of hoops to jump through to get hooked up with a pool manufacturer, you know, especially right now. The demand is so high. Getting pools is probably our biggest problem, even though we have found a supplier at this time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's how I got in, and we were supposed to do some training with the whole COVID thing. We were supposed to go down to Knoxville over the Christmas break. Didn't happen. They just kind of turned everything off with the COVID. And so we've had some guys come train us here. We put our first pool in a couple weeks ago, and they said we did an outstanding job, gave us some high remarks on how we did, and I really do think it turned out fantastic. So we're up and running now, and we're going to not just install pools, but we're going to service pools and
like the maintenance. So you're gonna be a pool boy.
Yes. Yeah.
No, we got the speedos that say Easy Life on the back of them.
Yeah, now we just need to start working.
Easy Life is the name of the pool.
Yes. Right. Easy Life Pools is the name of the company. And we have quite a few jobs already. The summer's just about booked. We have a few jobs down in Troy, Salina area, Versailles area. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're just, you know, around the area and putting in pools. I didn't realize there was going to be quite the demand, but, you know, people today are putting a lot of money in their backyards and yes. their homes because, yep. you know, that's where they're spending a lot of time now.
Yeah, and it increases the value of their home if they decide they want to ever retire and downsize or upsize or move to a different place, you know, that kind of thing is helps with the value of it.
Yeah, and people, what I've noticed is, you know, again, putting in a pool is not like, you know, buying a gallon of milk. There's a little bit of thought and investment yeah. that goes into that. And maybe getting started in your life, it's out of your reach possibly as a budget standpoint. But what we've noticed is that the empty nesters are the ones that, you know, are starting to really get into putting in pools because the empty nesters potentially, you know, are a little bit more financially sound mm-hmm. and they are looking at trying to build something with their house and specifically their backyard that are going to draw their kids
yeah.
and their grandkids
yep.
you know, back to the house.
Yep.
And,
lures.
And a number of our projects have been incredible projects for just absolutely, we've met, I mean, Brad's just been doing it for a few months, but I can't tell you how many neat people you run into, people that you talk to, that you build relationships and just, you know, strong friendships with. And it's just so much fun to go back year after year. And we've, you know, I've built so many awesome projects with, you know, really cool people. And it's so much fun to go back and talk to them. And yeah, all of them that I'm sitting here thinking about are all basically, like I said, empty nesters that are like, well, we got to do something to get the kids to come back,
yeah.
you know, and they want their kids to come back and they want to, you know, yeah. have a place to hang out in the summertime. And certainly, like I said, the empty nesters, you know, the kids are out of school, getting married, having kids, and they want all the family back. Mm-hmm. And so they want a pool to hang out in. They want, you know, to be able to grill out. You know, a lot of them involve, again, pavilions with roof structures and TVs and stuff. So, you know, they're basically, I don't know, adding onto their house, but mm-hmm. they're adding a space that, you know, they can entertain 10 to 50 people. And again, they're just trying to get their, you know, their family back together and
yeah.
and around a swimming pool and around a fireplace outside is with a TV and some sound and things. That's just yep. what they're doing.
Neighbors tend
neighbors.
To come on over. And
yeah.
we tell people there's that hidden expense also of the bill for beverages tends to go up also.
That's for sure. it's been a blast so far. I mean,
yeah, yeah, for me, the exciting thing is seeing all these projects going on. And I do give Steve credit once in a while. And this is one of those times where, you know, we go look at a pool and his mind just starts to wander on, like, you know, we could do this here, this there.
Yep.
And, you know, by the time it's all said and done, they just have an absolutely beautiful project that Steve's kind of designed, put together, and just cover all the bases. And that's another reason, you know, he wanted us to get into the pool business is just keep everything in-house and kind of do the whole project.
Yeah, yeah, coordinate everything.
Yeah,
so you don't have to rely on somebody else to do something and they don't have to wait for you to finish or you don't, you know, it's just
exactly
much simpler. So that, yeah. Are there other pool building designing people around this area? I don't know that I've seen
the closest one, and he's has a very, very good business, and he's been doing pools as long as I can remember. He's been doing pools as long as I can remember. I've been in the landscape business for 27 years now, and there's a company up in Lima called Shawnee Pool, and
oh, yeah.
Bob yeah. Sutherland is the owner, and Bob's a great guy, mm-hmm. Has a fantastic business, and they've been doing it, I don't know, Bob's in his early 70s, so, I mean, I think he's been putting in pools for 40 years. Bob does a very good job. And then there's another company from Maria's Dine, which was kind of sold and bought, and or was guy developed the business and then sold it to another guy. They've been, I think, successful. So there's a few, you know, people out there.
There are some local
if you go south, the only place I know south that's the big player in the Tip Troy area would be Knickerbocker. They are second generation. Tom Knickerbocker owns, Tom Jr. owns it. Tom Sr. started it. They have a very, very, very good business. And
so it's not like there's three in every county or anything like that.
No, I mean, you know, pool design or pool installation is, you know, can be a little bit more technical or complex in some respects. And I mean, not every, you know, it's not like a, you know, microwave oven, you know, not everybody's going to want one, need one, or have one in their house. So there's not as many people out there, I guess you could say, but the demand, you know, starting with, I think, the economy being really good, started the trend. People had a little bit more disposable income. And then also, I think the COVID thing really accelerated it with people having to stay home all the time or,
And now they realize that they like staying home, because you can go to, like, right now, Wayne Street Market has crazy steak prices, $5.99 for T-bones, for God's sake.
Yeah. I mean, you know. Throw some of those on the grill, sit by the pool.
Yeah. Instead of
great little afternoon.
Instead of, you know, going out with a family and spending $200 on six people to eat T-bones, you can do them yourself.
Feed half the neighborhood.
Yep. And, you know, $200 worth of T-bones is a lot of T-bones.
Yeah. So the trend towards home improvement, home remodeling, and then staycations, you know, has just been a trend that's, I hope, continues, because it started back in 2010 when the economy kind of fell apart a little bit there. People weren't traveling. Then you kind of recover from that, and then people aren't traveling again because of COVID. And so, you know, people are definitely staying home, and they want, you know, some fun amenities to hang out and invite their friends over. So that's where we come in.
That's where we come in.
So what do they do if they decide they want to at least look at how it might work on their property and what it would cost and that type of thing? Do they call you at the Nature's Green, or is there a different number? Just tell one of your kids to catch Mr. Evers at school.
Catch me at school.
Stop by and tell mom and dad how we're going to do the pool.
I send flyers home with them.
Ah, that's good. Hey, that's a phone number.
They just can get a hold of me or Brad, or they just call at Nature Screen here in Fort Recovery. And Brad and I have been actually even busier than I really anticipated we would be with, you know, site visits. It's, you know, again, can be a little bit more, actually significantly more complex as far as elevations and, you know, every project's different. I mean,
it is.
We got one on Lake Laramie that, you know,
it's right on the water.
Right on the water. So, you know, we've got to...
They want an infinity edge and...
Give a lot of thought to, A, how to build it. Elevation's always... I'm always thinking about what elevation it needs to be in that particular project. There's no way to get a pool in the backyard, so we either have to go over the house or barge it in from across from across the lake. I'm not sure.
I guess you could ship it in. So you can't get the pool itself is it a fiberglass?
We do fiberglass shells, and then we also will do a liner type pool, which liners are, in that particular instance, would actually be easier because those actually kind of go in pieces.
Yeah.
And so you can bring the pieces in and assemble it, but we still need a cement truck in the backyard. But this particular project, I think, is just going to simply dictate a fiberglass pool, because there's going to be issues with water pressure because we're so close to the lake that we need to make sure that it actually is possible to float a pool. So if you get too much water pressure underneath the pool, you can actually float
it'll
them.
It'll lift it.
So again, you know, like I said, we crane it over top of a house, or, you know, it's...
I'd say bring it in and a couple of people with canoes and bring it
everybody take from a corner.
Well, I was going to say that is right, because we could get somebody, four guys on each corner, and throw that in on the other side of the lake, and we could paddle that thing across.
Sounds easy.
Oh, well.
I'm going to put a little trolling motor on that canoe.
There you go.
Tell you what, I bet our manufacturer's never seen that done before. We could make some trade magazines with that. Well, stay tuned.
Yeah. Well, we'll get updates on that.
We'll get updates on that.
And you know, just other things like, you know, working on the side of a hill a lot of times can be very challenging.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Shooting those elevations and just kind of making sure that pool is level can sometimes be a little bit of a challenge, but.
And it all gets into, you know, back to, it works really well with Nature's Green with what we've always done, because we do retaining walls and that project we're looking at in Bern. The backyard slopes unbelievably sharply from the house out to the property line. So we're going to have to put like three retaining walls in to create a level space to get the pool in. And that's where we've got just absolutely without question the best people in the world to help us with Eric and Derek and Lucas and all the guys that we have are unbelievably talented. And, you know, they can get the walls in and get our elevation, help us get our elevation set. And so... You know, I can dream it up and know what I want it to look like. You know, Brad can figure the pool and the plumbing and all that stuff out. And then I've got the most talented people in the world that I can dream something up. And then I give it to Eric and I'm like, dude, how can we build this? And he'll sit there and look at it for a while and scratch his head and he goes, oh, yeah, we can do that. And then he figures out the mechanics and the engineering of getting the walls in and, and getting everything set and getting the pavers in and the travertine or whatever. I'm super lucky. I'm super lucky to have Brad. I'm super lucky to have Eric and Lucas and Derek and Dan and all the guys at the shop that are super talented, super bright, and just work their rear ends off.
Well, and I'm pretty happy with the water feature I got that Eric put in. You know, he just...
Yeah, the dude's a genius.
Yeah, I mean, he's good.
He's a genius. He really
is. Was it Dan that he put in the rose arbor in the backyard?
That was Dan. He's been working. He's been with me for, I don't know, gosh. I have a message. 15 years or 12 years.
I have a message for Dan. Dylan Evers was working with him last year, and he was giving him all kinds of grief. Dylan had to leave early to go pitch in that whatever they were trying to call high school baseball in the summer. But he was giving him grief. Dylan Evers was fantastic last Monday in our opening baseball game. Dylan Evers is a stud.
And
Dan was giving him all kinds of grief. You're not gonna Dan. So tell Dan that Dylan is awesome.
It's that physical activity.
That
physical activity that they get at the nursery. It builds a quality athlete.
Yep.
I mean, you could talk, you know, to Brent Niekamp about how I molded him into the quality person that he is today from when he worked at Nature's Green with me and Bill Miller.
We'd
never fire him because he was too much fun to pick on. He was so much fun to pick on. Oh my gosh.
Is Bill Miller, he works for the city of Salina now. Is that the same Bill Miller?
Well, he's back. For his second tour
at Nature's Green.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, he's back. So we were happy to welcome him back last winter. So now, if we could just get Brent back, Maybe in the summertime, if we could get him to come back, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Don't you think he could? He'd help you put in pools, I think.
We would be like the big red machine.
Oh, my gosh. It'd be unbelievable.
Green machine.
Yeah, that's right. He could be the pool tester. So after you get them in, he can make sure that they're swimmable.
That's
right. Someone does have to do
bring his kids out.
That's right.
And I'll jump around and see if it's
suitable.
Make sure it's okay for the
homeowner.
So all I have to do is get a hold of you guys and you can at least take a look and see.
Go check it out. Yeah.
If it's feasible with the, you know.
Oh, we can fit it in. We can make it work.
We'll make anything work.
So, approximate cost of a pool. Are you talking between $10,000 and $100,000, or what are you?
It would be somewhere between $10,000 and $100,000. Yes, that is correct.
So, what do you get for $10,000? The size of this table that you're sitting at.
That would be one of the pools you get from
Walmart.
Walmart there, yeah.
One of those kiddie pools.
One of those kiddie pools.
stuff some sand around
it. But we'll put some flowers around it and dress it up a little bit.
A couple of stepping stones.
No. Typically, the prices, it just depends on what you're getting.
Yeah, and size has to make some difference for sure. But
size, a little bit of difference, things like that. But, you're looking anywhere, probably in the 50,000 range, and then you start adding a cover, things like that, a heater, and that's what people don't realize.
Yeah.
I know I've been on a lot of appointments and saying, can you get this in for 50? And it's like, yes, we can do that. And then, they start adding things on and things, it's like anything else. It's like a vehicle. If you buy a vehicle, you can get kind of the base model.
Yeah.
And then you start adding everything up. Prices are going to go up and things like that.
And if you're going to have something nice like a pool, you want to be able to,
Yeah, the price range is going to be $55,000 to $75,000.
That's pretty safe there, yeah.
Add an automatic locking cover, which an automatic cover is, $14,000. But my goodness, they save you so much time, energy, money. You can cover them.
Mm-hmm. Peace of mind.
Their
insurance probably is.
Insurance makes a difference if you have an automatic locking cover.
Yeah.
Saves you heat, saves you chemicals, obviously cleaning. It just is the way to go. And then heaters, salt systems. There's so many things, like Brad said, it's like almost buying a car. There's all kinds of, you can do LED lights, you can do laminar streams, you can do bubblers, you can do deck jets, you can do so many different things. Yeah. And
the LED lights, dial in any color you want, change the water color.
That's all pretty neat and all of that, but it also probably, each one of those sort of almost pays for itself in resale value of the property?
Certainly resale value, and people, sometimes will, get sticker shock on, what the pool costs. And I always tell people it's absolutely the same price as a fancy SUV, and you are going to have way more fun with it than you are an SUV. And our investment doesn't drop in value by 35% the minute you drive off the lot. Your vehicle purchase drops in price by 35%. Ours is going to increase in value over time. So again, it is the same price as people again will get some, sticker shock. It's like, hey, it's the same price as a new pickup truck. If you buy a new Chevy 4x4, four-wheel drive, they're the same darn price.
Yeah.
And
it's crazy.
It's, pool's going to last you a lifetime, and you can't, sounds corny, but you can't put a price on the amount of fun and memories you're going to make with your kids and family and friends and stuff, hanging out.
Yeah, but you have to buy chemicals and all that kind of stuff.
Not really. You put a salt system in, you buy a little bit of softener salt, and you're good to go.
With an SUV, you're putting $100 worth of gas in it.
Also, you never have put gas in one of these things.
That's right.
So the sticker shock at the pump doesn't affect you at all.
Yeah. it's, and lots of people are doing it, and it just seems like a pretty nice way for one, like you're saying, to as an attractant to your grandchildren.
Yep.
Yes.
Let's go to grandma's house. And sometimes they actually want to see grandma.
Occasionally.
Yeah. Especially when she brings cookies out to them when they're swimming.
Oh, now you're starting to talk my language. Cookies and pools.
My goal is to draw the kids back because of what I did, not because of their grandparents.
Yes.
Huh.
Because of my slick design and my cool swimming pool and pavilion.
Yep. So how many of your kids are hanging around at your house now?
None.
Oh. They'll be back.
No grandkids yet for them. So.
I'm not ready for that.
So are both of the girls in Lexington now?
No.
Corey's
in Lexington. She's working for the university hospital. Carly just went down last weekend.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. But
to hang out with her. Carly has just always been a complete... she's always had a complete fanatic about horses.
Oh, and she's in the right place in Lexington.
Yeah, so Corey told her to come down, and they spent all day Saturday out looking at... they went to a couple different horse farms and stuff, and
were they allowed on the horse farms?
Yeah, the Lexington's.
I know that it's always been a thing, but with COVID, I didn't know if they were even allowing people on the property anymore.
They're pretty. They never ran into any instances. I mean, Kentucky's, I think, a little bit more lenient, and they never had any issues. I mean, they had masks on. They were sending me pictures, and wherever they went, they had masks on, but they still got to visit, I think, everything they wanted to.
Yeah, around that area is unreal.
It's unbelievable.
So beautiful.
Unbelievably beautiful.
Yeah, and even where my grandparents lived near there, and they were kind of in the middle of horse country. They didn't do horses, but all around them are several big-time horse things. I think in right around 2000, 2005, in three of those years, the horse that won the Kentucky Derby was either born or raised within 3 miles of where my mom grew up.
Oh, wow.
that's like right square in the middle of it. And when I go down there, I love to drive through there. And most of them have been horse farms forever, but some of them haven't. And it's just, you know, Calumet Farms is just, that's incredible.
Yeah, to drive down through there, there's nothing prettier than, you know, going through there and seeing all the rolling fences.
Yep, the black fences, or sometimes they're white.
Yeah.
And, now, you may not know this, but one of the jobs that many of the Kentucky Wildcat basketball players were able to get was one of their jobs was one of the local dealerships would loan them a car, and they were in charge of driving around two or three of these horse farms and making sure the fences were still up.
That's not a bad. That's not a bad gig.
Yeah. So that's
a bad gig. I would do that. Yeah. I thought you said they were going to paint them, and I'm like,
I'm
out.
No, they were making sure that they were painted, and you know they were in charge of taking these nice cars that they were loaned, and driving by and making sure those fences were still up and still painted.
Could they keep those cars overnight?
They could keep them for the entire season.
Entire
season. Yes. Yes.
Oh, I'm calling the NCAA.
Sounds fishy. But they're performing a service.
Yeah, it's a job. I mean, you know, how else can you be sure that those fences are going to be beautiful?
Got to keep the horses.
Is that owner that lives in Florida and has a horse farm in Kentucky? Is he going to come up every couple of days and drive around, make sure his fences are up? Well, that just didn't make any sense. Pay some nice college boy to take care of that.
Yeah, they need the money.
Yes. So that's why it's real easy to get good basketball players in Kentucky.
You were talking about his girls earlier also. His daughter, Carly, she kind of keeps that place running a lot of times.
In Fort Recovery?
In Fort Recovery.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely.
Yeah, she's good.
She's unbelievable.
Yeah. Your wife, Nikki, does a heck of a job out there.
Those
are the people behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. You don't always...
See, I think I've already gotten a call from her this morning saying that Steve's late for work.
Yeah, by the looks of the clock, I'm not surprised. She may have already called and said, "Where are you at?
Where are you at?"
Yeah, that's probably the case. I just anymore. I just it was Brad's fault.
Yeah,
I get a lot of that.
That's my go-to. Yeah. That's my go-to at this.
Then
point.
You just give him your smile and everything.
She used to like me, but now I think she, you know, keeping Steve out. Yeah. But no, great family business. I enjoy working for and with the Stones, and in fact, there's a lot of families that work there. We have the Westfalls.
Yep, the Westfalls from Union City. We got the Millers from Wabash, the big city.
Yeah. Oh, Karen in the office is fantastic.
Does that?
Oh,
Bill's wife.
Yeah. Yeah, we would be lost without her. She keeps us on our toes. Steve and I are both a little, you know, a little relaxed, and yeah, we'll get this done. And she's like always yelling at us, like, "Hey, you still need to get this done." It's like
whipping the chair.
Yeah, she's right. It's kind of like, all right, yep, we'll get it done here. Then we have the Evers family. I work there, obviously, and then I have two kids there, so it's.
Benjamin,
yeah, he's at Bowling Green, but he'll be coming back here.
Freshman year
over at Bowling Green, and he's going to be coming back probably about the second week of May. Dig right in, and then my daughter
literally dig right in
is right.
You know, those his kids are they're very smart, very talented, you know, very hardworking, great kids. I mean,
that's the Leonards.
I mean, obviously that's the Leonards. Obviously that's the Leonards coming out.
I knew that was coming. Okay.
That's the Leonards coming out in them right there.
Yeah.
No, and they do look like Leonards, by the way. The younger two, anyways. But
I'm not sure how you did that. You had a couple of them that just are spitting images of Leonards, and then Maddie is just a spitting image of you.
Yes. And Alex, he's a little bit like me as well. But yeah, two and two. Two look like me. God bless those kids. And two look like my wife. So,
well, either way, it's okay.
Yeah, either way, it's okay. Yep. All is good.
Well, I got to get to work.
So. Yep. Yeah, I think your wife's about ready to call again.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see you next week after a week of 70-degree weather and see.
Oh, it'll be busy.
See what the report is then.
That sounds like pool weather.
Yeah. There you go. So it's been walking the. Through the garden with Steve Stone.
Walk through the garden and a swim through the swimming pool.
Through the swimming pool with Brad Evers. We'll be back next week, and we'll see you then.
Thanks for joining us again this week for a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. If you have a gardening question you'd like Steve to answer, just email him at steve@naturesgreennursery.com and he'll answer it on a later show. Be sure to join us again next week for a walk through the garden with Steve Stone.